Lunch with Leon.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Lunch with Leon. So this episode, I'm speaking to somebody from the coach industry, somebody that I've really admired and enjoyed talking to. My guest in this episode is Candice Mason from Mason's Coach Hire. So Candice and I know each other. She has been a huge exponent for the coach industry for many years. We've had some great times together. We sat next to each other at a formal dinner recently. She's a great supporter for the women in bus and coach. And as well as running a really successful family business, she has other entrepreneurial interests as well. I think she's a fantastic role model for so many people in our industry, especially for entrepreneurs, especially for women, and especially for people that really want to make progress. Of course, she's a world away from the big groups, from the big corporates, and like so many people that we meet, she's doing a fantastic job in her local community, as well as running a really successful business. So I was just fascinated to talk to Candice, and especially to bring her on the show. I hope you feel the same. Of course, Women in Bus and Coach is really going from strength to strength. So many of us are really pleased to support it. And of course, I'm not surprised that Candice is a member of the group that is making it all go. This is a really exciting time in our industry, and really hope that you are as engaged as I am with the enthusiasm of people like Candice of what she's doing in our industry. So I started out by asking her how are things going.
It's good, actually. Yeah, we're having a good period. So obviously, from our perspective, we're still in a recovery period post-pandemic. I still feel like there's a lot of work that we need to do. And a lot of the work that we have done on the business has been about stabilizing its financial position to make sure it's in the strongest position possible. The way in which we've done that is obviously gotten a lot better with our finances and kept our finger on the ball a lot more. And we've looked at the types of work that we offer. We did a lot of work around utilization of vehicles and drivers, trying to maximize what we have. And we've expanded our contracts in order to give some security to the business in its future.
Sure. I mean, it seems like a long time ago now, COVID, doesn't it? But actually, it runs through everything we still do. You know,
I definitely feel that it's a shame we just got back to normal and forgot about it, because I do feel, not just for my business, but for lots of other businesses, that there is still a lot of work in that recovery period. And I feel like although we've come out of the other side, the coach industry, particularly travel and tourism, was one of the last to come back. So it was a much longer period. It's taken, whilst it did come back very strong, we're still missing those gaps, the sort of almost 2 years of no income. And then, of course, we've been hit by things like surging fuel prices in that period and national shortage of drivers, which of course adds expense where you then increase salaries or you're potentially using agency drivers. So I feel like for a period of about 3 years, there were a lot of unpredictable costs that, as a small business, whilst you can predict as much as you can, there was a lot that was still quite damaging to businesses in that period. So I definitely feel like, I mean, we always knew our recovery period was going to be six plus years. And so I still feel like we're in that process.
Yeah. And it's interesting, isn't it? Because on the sort of mainstream stuff on bus and rail, commuting hasn't come back as much, but leisure has.
Yes.
It's interesting that although on regular public transportation, leisure is doing quite well, but actually in your sector, the travel and tourism side, actually that's taken a while to come back.
I think where we had that, you've got to think that a big chunk of my clients coming out on day trips and holidays are in a retirement age range. And so when the sort of country was reopened, we had this kind of, we're allowed out, we're not allowed out, we're this, we're that, shielding, not shielding, whatever it was going on. I feel like that particular age group of people had a really rough ride of it in terms of their confidence in what they could and couldn't do. And so we found you know, for a long time afterwards, there were still people that weren't quite sure about traveling, particularly in a group way. We also had challenges around the venues that were and were not allowing us to enter. Obviously, sort of back to normal now. A lot of those businesses have also suffered as a course of that period and have changed a lot of the ways in which they're prepared to work with us. So whereas before we had a lot of flexibility around numbers and group bookings and things like that, a lot of venues have adapted their procedures, quite rightfully so, but it made launching that part of the business a little bit more challenging.
Oh, isn't that interesting? I'm glad to hear things are recovering, but yeah, I see the point entirely. More elderly people, higher levels of risk, a bit more cautious.
Yeah, and of course, we actually lost quite a lot of customers during that phase, vulnerable customers, natural ends in life. So there's been a period of sort of rejigging that sort of things around. I mean, we did change a lot of our business. I mean, we did not sit at home drinking gin in the garden like many other people I heard were doing. We saw that as a great opportunity, and although it didn't feel like it at the time, now I look back on it, hindsight's a wonderful thing, isn't it? Actually, it allowed us to press pause on the business for a period of time, really think about what we want out of the business, where we want it to go, what its future looked like, what its revenue streams were, how we manage our processes, how we manage our staff, literally every area of the business. We were able to hit pause on that, reevaluate it, and make a lot of changes. So we changed, for example, all of our computer systems, and we tried to automate nearly everything that we were doing. So in terms of the customer experience, but also the driver experience, so that it was really clear, much easier to run, not necessarily needing as much manpower in the office. So it was a big investment at the time in terms of the technology that we put in place. But in the long run, that's proved to be amazing for us.
That's interesting, because as you say, what was the phrase, that our children were being educated at home by alcoholics? A lot of people just threw their business on ice and waited. So from what you're saying, although you didn't really want it, the fact that you got a period of no activity, you used that time and actually spent a bit of money in order to prepare the business.
Money we had, we invested. I mean, I actually got really good at hunting out grants and various little pockets of bits and pieces. I got very good at negotiating costs with people. So, you know, it was done on a fairly decent shoestring, I suppose. But from my perspective, so for example, if you pay an administrator, I don't know, £20,000-£30,000 a year, but the piece of software you need to implement costs 10,000 and will require a much lesser percentage of man input, you've got to look at it as not just what's going to impact the business here and now, but what does that business look like in 3 and 5 years' time? So I've always been much more visionary about the business and thought much further forward about its future. So it's made it more manageable to think about the things that need to be done today that will impact that.
Well, look, there's a really interesting lesson which I've not heard before, and I'm just going to read it back to you to make sure I understood it and make sure the listeners understand it. Because there was a pause, you actually spent some money and did some work inside the business, which would have been very disruptive if you tried to do it in full operations.
Very much so, yes.
So you took advantage of the lull, spent some money, and brought the business up to date in a number of ways, especially in terms of internal processes and so on, which meant you were ready as soon as the flag went down. You were ready to get back into business in a more streamlined way. How interesting. So you talked about grants. Obviously, during the COVID period, CPT and others were making a bit of noise with government because it felt like bus was getting a significant amount of subsidy and coach wasn't. And I saw some clips, social media and so on, where some other coach operators, not you, were making quite a lot of noise about the lack of it. But what came through in some of that, I do remember one, a lady from somewhere in the north who broadly had got to put a guarantee. Yeah. And I remember thinking, golly, you know, when one coach costs as much as your house, that's a pretty risky.
Well, that's pretty normal in the coach industry to personally guarantee vehicles against your homes. You've got to feel very confident in your business to know that that's the right thing to do. And of course, the pandemic was not a predictable thing. So you have to deal with those. I think coach operators are very creative at how they fund. you know, coaches can cost, a secondhand coach, you might get a really old one for sort of 50 grand, but they go right up to 300,000 and 400,000. So they're not small feats of money. So I think we do have to be creative about how we do that. And we have to be very confident in the money that we're spending on those.
Sure. But it does just remind us, doesn't it, that so coach operators generally are highly leveraged, lots of vehicles on finance. I'm not meaning you specifically, but the industry generally. The margins are thin enough as it is. And if the income stream gets disrupted, you're on the hook for the finance and no income.
Yeah. Yeah, there are different finance companies that you can do different things. Some will do sort of various balloon payments and different terms. We've got a couple that actually have a decrease of payment in the winter months, which is when we would normally, you know, be less busy, I suppose. So, that, like I say, there are lots of creative things you can do. I think the way around that is to build those relationships with your finance companies. It comes out of loyalty, of them understanding your business. One of the benefits to having contracts within your business is from a finance company's perspective, they can see the length of those contracts. They can see that it's lasting, you know, 3, 4, 5 years, whatever it might be. And that, I think, has put us in a really strong position in terms of our financials. Our finance companies have been very supportive of us, but we've been very honest, and we had a stable business going into the pandemic. So it was only natural it was going to come out, although a little bit worn, maybe quite as stable. And actually, I mean, we went into the pandemic with 18 vehicles and we now are at 25. So we've grown significantly as a result of all of the work that we've done.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Oh, that is very interesting. So you are a bigger business post COVID. Yes. That's unusual, isn't it? A lot of businesses are smaller businesses.
But what we did was streamline the things that we were doing. So we took out some of the work that was not worth doing. We focused on the work that was worth doing. We very cleverly negotiated contracts, school transport costs, various other bits and pieces. We looked at every outgoing of the, you know, really, really scrutinized every outgoing of the business. Could we reduce it? Could we streamline it? Could we systemize it in any way that would reduce the cost? So I think it has been several years worth of work to get it to that stage.
Yeah, true. And in terms of the government at that time, I mean, was the government deaf?
Well, I got very involved in lobbying Parliament. I have the privilege of having an MP that is on the Transport Select Committee, so Greg Smith. And I called him almost in the first week, and he came out and met with us. And from that, I got in touch with local news and radio stations, and it escalated from there, really. I got picked up by quite a few national newspapers, TV campaigns, and was able to really get my point across. And I think you mentioned earlier there were members of the industry that made a lot of noise, and that's absolutely right. I think I hope that I was able to be a spokesperson for many of those businesses, and many of those businesses are like my business, which is a family-run company that has been passed down through generations with people that don't know anything about politics, but know everything about coaches, really passionate about what they do, but actually had felt, I mean, I'm speaking on behalf of my family, had felt very aggrieved by how we felt we'd been treated. And some members aren't necessarily able to articulate that in a way that government might listen to. And it became, I guess, people were angry and bitter and fed up and scared and worried about all of these things. So I attended every parliamentary group that I could. I attended on parliamentary groups for both sides. I lobbied to get a national survey completed that would present, in line with the CPT, that would present different details to the government about the value of coaches to the public. Yeah, I just did everything I thought I could, really. And I do feel like we were listened to, but there's only so much money out there and there's only so much you can do. And actually, whilst it's great lobbying government and speaking to MPs and even speaking to ministers, they don't actually hold the purse strings. And until you can get to the person who holds the purse strings and understands the real premise of what you're dealing with, I think you're banging on a very thick door.
No, for sure. And so you made a lot of noise and felt better for it. And the industry got a lot of attention. But in fact, the government didn't do anything specific for coach operators beyond what it was doing for
No,
them.
I think as an industry, we're pretty small, really. And whilst we do have an impact on our local communities, and I really believe that, you know, we are really such a hub and hive of our local communities. We take the children to school, we take the retired customers out to socialise. We are involved in, you know, various groups of passengers with differing disabilities that might not be able to use normal transport. So I feel like we are a hub of our community, but I feel possibly that we are quite small, really, in the scheme of business industries within the country. So I felt that's why we ended up getting slipped through the net, really.
So it's a long time since I had anything to do with coaching, really. But in my era, he says, sounding very old, it seemed like the manufacturers were working very hard to sell ever more expensive and fully featured coaches, mm-hmm. which many coach companies were seduced into buying mm-hmm. on the grounds they felt that the more beautiful the coach was and the more functionality it had and the bigger it was and the shinier it was and the glossier it was, that better paid work would follow. But in fact, it appeared to me that all that was happening was the coaches were getting better, but the prices weren't going anywhere.
Yeah, I mean, I can't comment on people's pricing scales. There is a lot of conversations around pricing, underselling, undercutting. I've always been of the mind that competition is a good thing. It keeps you on your toes. I feel in my area, there is enough work for everybody. If there wasn't, one of us wouldn't be here. And I've always been of the mind to worry about what I'm doing, what I need to charge because of my overheads and costs. And I actually don't really get involved in that side of things. Now, for us, in terms of investment of fleet, actually one of the keys, and this is pre-pandemic, we wanted to bring our fleet fairly in line so that they were all one particular model of coach. And the reason for that is it meant stocking of parts, maintenance, so on and so forth, would be much more manageable if your fleet is all one brand. And also, again, it's me and my thinking about the future. It's all very good and well having a couple of old bangers that earn you an absolute buck, but that if they're in the workshop every week costing you $5,000, they're pretty useless. So actually some of that investment has been about what's going to sustain keeping those vehicles out of the workshop, on the road 24/7, that aren't going to cost an absolute arm and a leg, although some of them definitely do. So yeah, I think I'd like to think that whilst those lovely big shiny vehicles are very appealing, I'd like to think that most of us have gone about those purchases very tactfully. I can't say all, because I think there are still a few Fred the Sheds out there.
Sure, indeed. Brilliant.
Lunch with Leon, in association with Passenger Transport magazine. Check out passengertransport.co.uk.
You're super busy. I know that because of our conversations getting us to this podcast. Let's just touch on the Women in Bus and Coach, which, as we're talking today, was launched a week or so ago formally at the NEC, taking up the space where the normal NEC Coach and Bus show would have been. So we had the launch this week. There's an event in House of Commons, I think, on Monday.
Yes, that's correct.
So just give us the quick synopsis on Women in Bus and Coach.
So Women in Bus and Coach has been launched to try and attract more females into a very male-dominated environment. The female population within the bus and coach industry is about 10%. And there's very much evidence to suggest that people using transport want to see the person they are entrusting with transporting them reflects themselves in some capacity. So you want to see a whole diverse range of people running those businesses and operations reflecting what's going on in the local community. So that's the premise behind that launch. There are some challenges in order, and it's not just getting women into bus and coaches, other ethnicities, abilities, and it really the steering group wished to promote the opportunities that would be available and to make it appealing and to consider some of the challenges that women might face coming into the industry and how we might overcome those and to put those out as best practice offerings to other bus and coach operators to be able to implement, really.
Well, I think it's a fabulous initiative. And
it's something, yeah, it's something that's very close to my heart. I arrived in my family business 10 years ago. I took a sabbatical from work for a year to help my husband, and that was 10 years ago. And
never gone back.
Never gone back, never looked back. I've absolutely loved it. But the downside is I was the only woman in my business for a very long time. And I think that you do need a mix of different diversities within a business in order to get a full range of opportunities out of the business. Different people approach things very differently. The other thing is, you know, I really had to earn my place. I had to earn the respect of male counterparts within the industry. And I just don't think that is a future I would want for my daughter, that she felt she had to earn her place. She's warranted to be there. She has all the great skills, so on and so forth. So I feel like that's something that is based on my own previous experiences. And, you know, women do have different needs. I can say this month, a female driver of mine had a miscarriage, and that is so difficult. And unless you've got other females within the business, that is really difficult for a male to empathize with, to understand what they're going to need and how to support them. I've also had myself interesting, I would call semi-abusive communications from males within the industry. And not that it's regular, but it's enough that, and I actually had a conversation with someone and said, well, it's kind of normal. You know, I've sort of grown a bit of a thick skin and I'm quite capable of standing up for myself. Well, that's great, but that isn't okay for that to be the case. And I'm sure there are stories and similarities from a male perspective, but as a woman, I'm very passionate about supporting females. I mean, I literally could talk about this all day long. I was brought up, my dad, when I was born, thought he was having a boy, and he thought his son would be the next, I don't know, motorbike champion of the world. And out popped this little girl, and he didn't know what to do with me. But he's, from the day I was born, has said to me, there's nothing you couldn't do that a male couldn't do. You just go for whatever you want, whatever makes you happy. And I feel like that is the message. And I don't think it matters whether you're female, male, having a disability, a different ethnicity. I think you should be accepted for the things that you want to do in life.
Indeed. You say there's some abuse and so on. Are there just also cases where women in the industry are just not taken as seriously as men?
Yeah, I think I've definitely had to earn my place. I'm very business minded, as I've said to you. So of course I came into a family business knowing nothing about coaches, but knowing quite a lot about running businesses and finances and so on. And I mean, I made some choices early in my days, and my father-in-law, who's just a what I would call a very traditional, old school, old fashioned man, you know, I really had to prove myself to him and take a few risks and a bit of a punt on various contracts and bits and pieces that I was working on. So yeah, I definitely feel like I've had to work a little bit harder, maybe.
Yeah. No, I understand. Well, as you know, many of us are very supportive of the whole women in transport thing. My listeners know I've done Women in Rail more than once, where, again, at the risk of repeating it, to have 550 Muslim women all graduating, all excited at how to get into effectively a male-dominated industry of rail signal engineering, track engineering, highway engineering, and so on, was just extraordinary. And it's just wonderful that young people at all want to come into the transport sector, and especially people from different backgrounds to the traditional, which is just amazing. So I hope the whole Women in Bus and Coach thing goes really very well. It's had a tremendous launch. You know, you've got loads of support from people around the.
I feel like it's. I feel like it's got people quite excited and curious about what that might mean. I feel like the coach industry in particular have probably a bit of an advantage in this, because I keep mentioning it, how integral we are to our communities. So we're well respected within our communities, we're trusted as businesses. So I feel like we could make some really good changes, and the industry has really struggled for drivers. And it's not just driving positions that I would promote to women. There are very few female operations managers. There are very few female transport managers, very few female mechanics. So I feel like we could potentially open those up to women within our communities.
Yeah. Well, I know, but I'm sure most of my listeners, and certainly people in the industry, don't know that you have some spare moments when you do other things other than places of coaches. Tell us about that.
I run a second business, which I blend herbal teas for women in hormone balancing, in health and well-being. It's been a bit of a passion project of mine. It's something I've done for a long, long time. I really wanted to launch this. I had some downtime in the lockdowns that made me think, right, I could actually do this. We've worked on putting a management team in place at Mason's, trying to free me up a little bit to be able to just do some different things, really. And I think for me, I mean, I love running a business. I'm completely unemployable now. I couldn't go back to any sort of corporate world. I've loved running a business. I've loved being able to take some risks. I've loved the level of responsibility. I've loved steering something to growth. And I've proven that within my coach business, which is very service-based. And I was really curious about what product-based businesses do, how that all works. And I was also very curious about a sort of modern business model, if you like, that really embraces social media and social advertising and just a completely different type of business. So I feel like one day when I've done both of those businesses, I'll have a good breadth of skills that might allow me to do some other things.
Well, I'm sure loads of people listening to this are not only inspired by all of that, but also your energy, because running a transport business is pretty full on most of the time.
Oh, yeah, it never sleeps. It never sleeps.
Indeed. So, and then the other thing that I suppose I was interested, and we've talked about this privately before. I mean, effectively, you married into this business and then became a prime mover of it. That's an uphill struggle, I would have thought, isn't it?
We're 20 years in this year. We're still married. So I actually feel like that might be my biggest achievement. If you can run a transport business and stay married and work together 24/7, you must have some pretty good grounding, I suppose. Look, it was always a choice. We did sort of 10 years together before I literally walked down the aisle, and within months of coming out of the church, he said, right, it's your turn now. Come on, you've got to come and help me. And like I say, the original plan was just to do it for a year. And we said we would do it for as long as it worked as a couple in our relationship. And there have been moments over the year, where we've questioned whether we should rethink what we're doing. But for the best part, it works really well for us. We've got some strategies as a couple that make it really important to us. So one of the things that we find almost therapeutic is that we hike a lot. And actually, one of the benefits to going hiking is that we get all of the talk of the business out of the way in the first hour, decompress the week, what's happened, replan the new week. And then we're just a couple again. And we've never put any restrictions on how we talk about things at home. It's what works for us. And sometimes you need to keep reevaluating that, and other times you just come together on it, really.
Well, it sounds like it's worked really well by the look of it.
I'm very lucky. But yeah, we both work really hard on the relationship as well as the business. And some days some of us work harder than others.
I understand that. Well, look, this is inspirational, I think, for young people, for people thinking about coming into the industry, people who are in the industry who maybe would like to be higher up the hierarchy and be in a managerial or director role. Because what you're proving is it's possible to be a wife and a mum and be inside a family business, even though you married into their family business, they didn't marry into yours, and so on. So all of those things you've dealt with, and you've got time to do all the lobbying and promote Women in Bus and Coach and run your other business. For most people, you know, that's way beyond what they think they're able to do. And what you
I have put a management team in place. I do have it, although my daughter is now, she's just gone to university. So I'm coming out of the other side, but I have worked all of the time. Yeah, I'm a pretty relentless character. I wouldn't necessarily say people should work the same as I do, but if you want to, you can find me on LinkedIn and every single social media platform going. I'm happy to mentor people. I'm happy to share with people what's worked for me. And you know what? I would just say it might look really shiny and rosy. It's not like that all of the time. And some weeks I'm really winning at life and others I'm not. And I think that's just being accepting of that, really.
That's completely inspirational. Well, there we have it. An inspirational leader in the UK coach sector. I've been talking to Candice Mason, who is director at Mason's Coaches. They have a website which you can easily find. It's masonscoachhire.co.uk. And you heard Candice's offer. She's on every possible piece of social media. You can contact her on LinkedIn and elsewhere. And she's up for talking, thinking, mentoring, and encouraging people in this industry to give their best and maybe even more. So it's been great delight. Candice, you and I know each other from the past, but it's fantastic to have you on here as a guest with Lunch with Leon, which is produced in association with Passenger Transport Magazine. And you'll find them, of course, at passengertransport.co.uk. We'll be back with another episode very, very soon. In the meantime, my greatest thanks to my good friend, Candice Mason.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you, Leon.